Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
And welcome into a Saturday afternoon edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We've had nothing but bad news for the last two. So a little bit of good news. Your Brooklyn Nets are 500 for the, Josh, first time since 2004?
Too much, Gavin. Actually, if the season ended today, the Nets would be the 8 seed against the Cavs 1 seed. So that leads to this question. Do we think that Trevor Booker should replace Mozgov in the starting lineup for that series, or are we going to stick with Big Moz?
I think Jared Allen is ready. He looked pretty good last night.
Yeah, he looked great. Had a lot of explosive finishes at the rim, and you can just tell that his wingspan is so long. He's such a great active finisher, very explosive, and it just adds a dimension to the Nets offense that they really haven't had in a long time.
Yeah, he had this one sequence where he went off a roll from D'Lo and finished with a nice one-handed flush, and then Elf Payton is like, me and my hair aren't going to take this. I'm going to go show this rook what's good. And then he just got destroyed at the rim. And we didn't really get to touch on it last podcast just because we were so focused on Lin's injury. But Kenny Atkinson not playing Allen the first game is kind of what I expected. And in the preseason, when Atkinson was talking about Allen being a member of the rotation sooner rather than later, I was a little bit dubious and I didn't really think he's ready. But I think the fact that Timofey Mozgov is a breathing mannequin has increased the timeline. So it seems like Allen's going to be a part of the rotation now.
If he keeps playing as well as he did last night, he's certainly going to gain more minutes. And he did a good job on Vucevic. He was still able to score a few times on him, but Allen did played him as well as you could have. But just touching on a point that you mentioned about Elfrid Payton's hair, how does he think that looks good?
He has a little New York flop, Josh. I thought you'd love it.
There's a lot of Orlando flop. And also Fournier used to have a man bun, and now he's going bald. So that transition happened kind of quickly.
Yeah, it looks like more conventional now. But, I mean, it seemed to be, like, pretty effective for him. Like, he played a pretty good game. Just to balance out the positive and the negative, and there was more positive stuff on that side that we are going to get through. But second, or really, if you go back to that Sixers preseason game, third game in a row, the Nets' total inability to stop a dominant big on the other end. I mean, as it's looking right now, the Nets are going to single-handedly kind of reverse the trend of a guard-oriented league, and we're getting the big man back. Nikola Vucevic, 17 to 22 from the field, 6 of 8 from 3, finished with a 41-12 double-double, and Timofey Mozgov just did not have a chance against him.
Yeah, he was completely unable to guard him in pick and roll, just giving him so much space to shoot. Also, you have to give credit to Vucevic because even though he was wide open, still knocking down 6 threes is tough to do. And even when Brook Lopez was on the Nets, they always had trouble with Vucevic. So he's just a guy that's constantly a Nets killer, always gives them trouble. Just a skilled big man that can get a shot off. And when he's cooking like that, it's hard to stop him.
All right, but you want to flip back to the positive. And I love the game that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson played. I know that was a big point for you as well. 25 minutes, 15 points, 3 steals, 3 blocks, couple rebounds. And I think I just wrote this after he had like one nice kickout pass for a 3, but he is like, I on this Nets team with the way they space the floor and like try and play 4 out or even 5 out basketball at times, he has a chance to, if this jump shot proves to be for real, to kind of be like the very, very poor man's Draymond for this team, just kind of dominant on the defensive end, extremely flexible. You can play him at 5 in some lineups. And I know in Summer League, we were kind of doubting his ability as a creator, but I think he's shown during the season to have a little bit more of that. Now, I don't expect him to start running pick and rolls with great frequency, but I think he provides like a little bit of that, and if nothing else, he's kind of in that type of role for this team.
Yeah, it depends on the matchup. I think that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's definitely comfortable shooting the mid-range shot, but at the same time, he does get himself into trouble when he's getting the ball from the three-point line and trying to dribble all his way to the basket. And he'll get off balance and kind of just throw up a wild shot. So he needs to stick to what he's comfortable with. It's obviously always good to expand your game, and that's something that Kenny Atkinson does preach to his young players. But you have to play within yourself and know what you can and can't do. But But he looked so great on the defensive end, just making explosive plays and getting steals and blocks. He had one play where he pinned Terrence Ross's shot to the glass. And for me, that's kind of important because you can play great defense in terms of just straight up kind of contesting the shot. But it's kind of like in football, if you just have a bunch of 4 or 5 yard gains in a row and never get that explosive play, it's going to be difficult for you to score. So when he's making these steals and blocks and getting the Nets out in transition, that's so huge because that's kind of what you expect from him coming into the league. And I think his first year showed that defensive promise. Last year, I was a little bit disappointed with his lack of steals and blocks and those game-changing plays, but he looked back to his old ways last night.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, like, first game, like, we just didn't see that. We were surprised because in the preseason, him and Carroll were both playing like that, and maybe it was just the home crowd, and they still did give up 121 points, but you just got to figure with the pace the Nets play out, with how many threes they take and how much that leads to runouts for other teams, and that's kind of inevitable. I was much happier outside of, obviously, Vucevic with the overall defensive effort tonight.
Yeah, energy looked good. I think especially it's a credit to Kenny Atkinson for getting the team ready to play after that devastating Jeremy Lin injury because he was one of the leaders of the team. So it was great to see the guys rebound and really compete. And as you mentioned, the pace is kind of is making that points per game look a little bit skewed. Obviously, they're still 29th in defensive efficiency right now. So they really need to get better at that if they want to kind of make that run that we expected where they can get into the mid-30s. But it's going to be hard with the talent on this team.
Yeah, and speaking of that Lin injury, that was the big thing I was looking for in this game, how they were able to kind of replicate that production at the point guard position. And I know we had a little bit of an argument over text about it. Like, I was overall really happy with how D'Angelo Russell played. Now that I'm looking at the box score, I do see that he had 8 turnovers in 25 minutes, which isn't great per se, but he was 8 of 16 from the field, 6 assists, 3 steals. And what really impressed me was just his willingness and ability to make the functional pass, because he was someone, if he thought it could look good on the Lakers, he would try it, and even if it wasn't always totally practical. But this game, there were a lot of times where they were just kind of spacing the floor around him, and he would just throw it to the open guy, and that sounds kind of simple, but it was something that he hasn't necessarily been willing to do in the past. And just the fact that he kept the ball moving and, like, everyone kind of bought into that, because, as always, your star kind of sets the tone, that really impressed me. And I think guys like Damari Carroll, who shot 3 of 4 from behind the arc, really benefited from it.
Yeah, D'Angelo was a little bit sloppy just in terms of over-dribbling and not always the crispest passes, but you can see his potential. And he was able to score efficiently even on a night where his three ball wasn't falling. And he was definitely the clear focal point of the Nets' offense and someone that Orlando really keyed in on.
Yeah, other guys who really played well, Trevor Booker for the second straight game, just highly efficient, 6 of 11 from the field, made a couple free throws, 17 and 11, double-double. And then Spencer Dinwiddie, even if he didn't shoot spectacularly well, really impressing me again and kind of carrying over from summer league. This is was kind of my highest hopes for him, that he'd still be able to play with, like, that herky-jerky game, good shooting, a lot of hustle. There was one play where he missed it twice and got his own rebound twice and put it in. And yeah, that's exactly what you want to see out of him. And even if he doesn't have quite that explosiveness to the rim that Lin does, there's not such a big drop off that, like, I mean, if he can maintain this level of play, that it doesn't necessarily doom the next season in the way I think you and I both thought would happen.
Yeah, and he went 6 of 15 from the field, but it's a little misleading, as you mentioned, because a lot of the misses he was able to get back on offensive rebounds and just very tenacious there. And Booker was someone that's really impressed me the first two games, just his constant activity and playing a little more controlled. Obviously, last year, there were times when he would get the rebound, sprint coast to coast, and just have a charge, and it was obvious that he should have dropped it off to one of the guards. So just playing more within himself and kind of harnessing that energy big man role that he's so good at.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Intern Alvin just showed me an article that the Nets were previously apparently in pursuit of Jameer Nelson to get an extra point guard.
He's signed with the Pelicans.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
So we might need to fire Alvin because he's kind of out of date.
No. Alvin actually showed me the update. So I guess it was your fault for interrupting me and my fault for not getting there quick enough. But Intern Alvin, everyone follow him on Twitter at Intern Alvin, great Columbia student who does a lot of good work for us.
What do you think of the half step, the emphasis on the half step travel? Because it seems like it's getting called much more frequently than years past. And for me, it's kind of frustrating when you see guys take 4 steps, like off of a Euro step, for example, but then when they move their feet half an inch, it's called immediately.
Yeah. I mean, I'd obviously like it if it's more consistent. I'd rather them trend in the direction of calling it, but then it kind of becomes meaningless when you just, like, obviously, like, everyone saw that travel LeBron had against the Celtics. If you just ignore it when the stars do it, then, like, I don't know. What's really the point?
Right. Yeah. I think, do you think LeVert's going to get those star calls soon?
Yeah.
Next week, maybe?
Next week. Yeah. I think it's maybe a game or two out. Speaking of which, we are going to wrap this podcast up previewing the Nets game against the Atlanta Hawks. Josh, what are your thoughts? Who's the first guy to visit a strip club in Atlanta?
I'm not going to answer that.
Well, you proposed the question. Free, are you kidding me?
That was an off-podcast joke.
No! Answer, what? Okay. Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion on it either, but I thought I would throw it out there. So let's get into the game. The Hawks, I'm ill-prepared for this podcast, but I think they beat the Mavericks.
They're 1-1.
First game, making them 1-1. Yeah, all right, so they're 1-1 on the season. Their best player is Dennis Schroeder, and then beyond him, it's the wildly overpaid Kent Bazemore, and that's just like a bunch of like hustle guys, a bunch of scrappers, gym rats, never given an inch.
Yeah, I like Schroeder, honestly. He's kind of crazy, but he does have a lot of talent. I think that it's going to be hard for D'Angelo Russell to stay in front of him because Schroeder is just one of the quickest point guards in the league, but he's averaging 26.5 points on this young season so far. But the Nets had pretty good success against Atlanta last year, and that was when they had Paul Millsap as their top guy. Even when they were hunting for a playoff spot, the Nets gave them a lot of trouble. So it's a pretty good matchup. Obviously, again, key that we're going to be talking about a lot this season, you can't let guys like Torian Prince and Kent Bazemore, these kind of below-average offensively wing players, go off against you. And if it's going to be a good game, I think one of the key things to note is that the Hawks' center is Dwayne Dedmon, who has no jump shot or offensive game whatsoever. So if Mozgov is giving up like 10 or 15 points and letting him get easy putbacks and pick and roll finishes, it's going to be a struggle because Mozgov has shown he can't defend stretch centers. And if he can't defend someone with no offensive game, then he doesn't really fit on this team at all. And yeah, should probably be not on the roster.
Yeah. I think the Nets have a really good chance of beating this team by getting them to play up tempo because they have a lot of really athletic guys. But at the same time, they're not guys who are necessarily like the most skilled players. So I think that's going to lead to a lot of Hawks turnovers and a lot of like missed layups in transition. And like then the Nets will have like the opportunity to run the other way. Unless they really don't shoot well from three, I'm pretty confident they can pull this off and move to 2-1 for the first time since the 1970s.
I hate you so much. If anyone wants to be my new co-host, you can just send me an email at the Locked On Nets Twitter account.
Intern Alvin enthusiastically jumped out of his chair.
Alvin, let's see it. But I'm excited to see John Collins play. I think he's an interesting prospect, and I was really high on him before the draft, so I'm excited to see what he can do for Atlanta. But yeah, what do you think of Joe Harris getting minutes instead of Sean Kilpatrick?
Also? Yeah, that's good. I meant to comment on that. I kind of love that because I think Kilpatrick, as skilled as he is, he like kind of like takes over the offense right when he comes in, and like then everything's kind of centered around him, and that's not how the Nets want to play. And I think that's why Atkinson put in Harris, who like objectively isn't as good of a player, but is willing to just run around, shoot a lot of threes, play some mediocre defense, and Kilpatrick just isn't really willing to fit in that way. So I think it's advantageous to have Harris out there. I like it.
Yeah, I like Kilpatrick. He's definitely going to get his shot throughout the year, so fans, don't worry about him not playing yet. It's only game 2 out of 82. But I think that Kenny Atkinson really wants that Allen Crabb, Joe Harris type of player sprinting around screens to get that open three-point shot. He always wants to have one of those guys on the court for most of the game, especially in Jeremy Lin's absence.
All right, Josh, we're going to finish this one up with two you-centric segments. The boss player of the game, we are looking for a sponsor for that. Like, you could just say, like, Gillette, boss player of the game. I guess, is Boss already, is there a company called Boss?
Hugo Boss.
Hugo Boss. Yeah, thank you, intern Alvin and off-screen Jeremy. So we should call him, probably.
Yeah, let me give the origin for the boss player of the game. Back when Boss was cool back in 2010 or 2011, that became my nickname because my last name is very similar to that, so people would call me J-Boss, and unfortunately, as much as I've tried to get rid of that nickname over the years, it's kind of always stuck with me.
No, you definitely like it.
No, I don't. I do not. So we're going to start with the boss player of the game, and we're going to give that out for every game, the player that surprised me most and contributed most to team success, and yesterday's boss player of the game is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Really good offense, just playing within himself and making great defensive plays that led to easy buckets for the team. He was one of the guys that kind of led that comeback and was a very energetic piece in helping the team stay afloat, even when it got down by 5 or 6 points at times.
All right, so Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, your Gillette Hugo Boss player of the game. All right, and Josh, anything outside of my co-hosting skills and me pocket dialing you in the middle of a job interview, grinding your gears this week?
I don't even want to talk about it. You pocket dialing me in the middle of my, it's on me for, because my phone's silence ringer button is broken, but yeah. It's also, if it had to be anyone, it would have been you.
I know, so. Yeah, we both acknowledge.
And what was I telling you about before that grinding my gears?
You were saying league pass.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So this is very ridiculous. I watched.
And this is all, we can say this is on intern Alvin, because he works at the NBA with our friend Marcus Barahal.
Yeah, so I was at a bar watching the Yankee game last night on the Upper East Side, and they were playing the Sixers Celtics game. So yeah. I asked them if they could switch one of the TVs to the Nets game, and then the bartender just points around to all of the paraphernalia on the walls, and I realized it's a Philly bar. As other patrons were laughing at me once I asked to switch the Sixers game off.
Yeah.
So then I had to watch the game on League Pass, and I realized that League Pass, obviously you can't watch something that's in your television zone live, but also you can't watch it the next day until 3 days after, which to me is completely ridiculous, and it kind of makes me lose support for NBA League Pass. It's such a great tool, but there's always a lot of technical issues, and just not being able to watch something the next day, if I can't make it live, come on, Adam Silver needs to do better.
Yeah, especially if you're gonna like charge that kind of money for it, and like what it's like, I think it's like 100 if you have one team, 200 if you have like every team.
Yeah, 200 for every team.
I mean, it should just be like an easy, intuitive service at that point. And, like, I get that, like, they have deals with, like, the local markets and you have to, like, respect the TV rights, blah, 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 blah. It's stupid.
Yeah. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. All right. And that wraps up this edition of the Locked on Nets podcast. Josh, enjoy your concert. What is it? Umphrey's McGee. Umphrey's McGee. So, first name Umphrey's, last name McGee.
JaVale Umphrey's McGee.
Yeah, he's bringing his rat tail with him. All right. For Josh, I'm Gavin. We will be back after the Hawks game, sometime after the Hawks game, with another podcast. Enjoy your weekend.
That was a good pod.